Bristol's weekly community and news show is brought to you from the Trinity Community Arts Centre by the Bristol Broadband Co-op. I'm Martin Cosgrave and I'll be with you till 8 o'clock. This evening we have an exclusive interview with ex-MI5 officer Annie Machon about her new book Spies, Lies and Whistleblowers. We'll also hear from Bristol webmaster, Adrian Connock, who's been doing his own investigations into the London bombings at officialconfusion.com. And we'll take a revolutionary new... I beg your pardon, I'm really fluffing out tonight. We'll take a look at a revolutionary new housing project in Gloucestershire. Stanley Forbes will also be here as usual with his lyrical comment gleaned from Inside the Corridors of Power, as will Jeff Sparks with his What's On guide. That's all in store tonight after Richard Ayres with this week's news.
While August inevitably means gridlock on the motorways, Radio Dialect can't help but noticing traffic. That traffic within Bristol itself seems relatively quiet, as many holidaymakers are away. September, with the return of schools, inevitably means a return to horrendous congestion, officially the worst in the country. The new transport plan recently prepared by local councils in the Foreman Avon area offered a one-off opportunity to do something about this. Certainly it is not short of further stark evidence of the dire strait of Bristol's traffic. 100,000 people in the area are living in air quality management areas, where the level of pollutants such as carbon monoxide, nitrogen dioxide and particulates are dangerously high. 60 children are killed or seriously injured in road accidents in Bristol every year. Yet anyone who believes the plan will provide Bristol with the sustainable transport system it promises is sadly mistaken. It forecasts that there will be up to 13% more traffic in Greater Bristol by 2011, or over 60,000 extra vehicles, travelling the equivalent distance of a return trip to the moon three times a day. It would require an area of land 10 times the size of Cribbs Causeway just to park them all. Yet even restricting traffic growth to this level is described as an ambitious and stretching growth reduction target. And to join those extra cars on the roads will be all the city centre's hospital's laundry, because from now they are being driven on a 160-mile round trip to be cleaned and redelivered as part of a cost-cutting exercise. Materials such as sheets, towels, blankets and uniforms, which used to be washed locally, are now carried in four lorry loads up to Rubery near Birmingham after a cheaper contractor with no premises in Bristol was hired. The newly hired company, Sunlight, which has its headquarters in Basingstoke, says the distance is not that far and says it has plans to open a small laundry in Bedminster, but it admits the bulk of washing will continue to be done in Rubery. Staff at the hospitals concerned have reported problems with the company, including delivery times and worries over cross-contamination of materials, which can increase the spread of infection. Managers at UBHT admit to teething problems with the contract, but they do say things are settling down. Bristol National Union of Journalists is asking for your support for their day of action against Northcliffe newspapers next Tuesday, the 16th, at the Bristol Evening Post. The campaign is aimed at Northcliffe centres across the country, including Bristol, and is a protest against the company's plans to make £25 million worth of cuts over the next 2 years, in part by cutting jobs. Northcliffe is making these cuts despite having made £100 million profit last year. It also paid massive salaries, bonuses and dividends to its directors and shareholders. It already sacked 9 journalists on the weekly Bristol Observer paper and transferred their work to the Evening Post. It has also not replaced 3 journalists on the Post who have left recently, and 2 more have been made redundant. The company is the most anti-union in German journalism and is refusing to negotiate with the NUJ on these cuts, which will weaken the news service we provide for readers, limit job opportunities for present and future generations of journalists, erode local democracy, and increase the workload for already hard-pressed workers. They will be leafleting outside the Post building from 11 o'clock in the morning on August the 16th. And there will also be a social event at the Z Bar on 46 to 48 Queen Charlotte Street, Welsh Back, from about 6:30. All members and supporters are welcome to attend. There will be a buffet. More union news. Labour stalwart Tony Benn will address a rally in support of sacked Rolls-Royce shop steward Jerry Hicks. The former Bristol MP will speak at a meeting at Bristol's Council House at 7:30pm on August the 17th, that's Wednesday, in favour of the amicus convener. Mr. Hicks, who worked in the Patchway site's engine test department, has been told by an interim employment tribunal hearing that he was probably dismissed on trade union grounds, but Rolls-Royce has refused to accept the tribunal's recommendation that he should be reinstated. And the test department's 94 members are being balloted on strike action, with a result expected on Friday. Mr. Hicks said he was delighted when Mr. Ben asked to get involved in the dispute. So that's, that's 7 o'clock at the Council House on College Green on Wednesday, the August 17th. And finally, Bristol's Blackberry season is about to kick off in earnest. Zero food miles, zero packaging, zero cost, and very healthy. So take a couple of bowls down to your local patch this weekend and enjoy. The season will be over all too soon, so get there before the birds do.
Thanks, Richard. Now I've got the weather forecast for the coming week. It's been a lovely day today here in Bristol, and if you're going to the night glow up at Ashton Court, it looks like to be the best of the 3 days. Overnight it will be very warm and remaining dry. Friday, slightly cooler, beginning well with some bright spells, turning overcast in the evening. Saturday, unfortunately, some heavy clouds bringing along with it heavy rain at times. It will feel quite humid as temperatures reach 17 to 18 degrees Celsius. On Sunday, sunny outbreaks in the morning, remaining dry, turning cloudy toward the afternoon. Monday will be a really bright and sunny day, with perhaps a few clouds, but nothing to spoil what looks to be a good day. Tuesday, again, quite a scorcher early morning, but turning overcast later on. And Wednesday, to bring us round us up to the next week's dialect, dry and bright weather, with some intense sunshine at times. So it'll probably be hotter in the studio even than it is this week.
Radio on.
Radio on.
Radio on.
Radio on.
Radio on.
Radio, radio on. On.
Despite over 2.5 million people coming out on the streets of London to tell the new Labour cabinet not to invade Iraq, they went ahead anyway. Not all of those working in Britain's security services agreed with the decision, and one former MI5 officer has written a book exposing much of the wastage and incompetence in the secret state. Annie Machon is a former MI5 counterintelligence officer and partner of David Shaler. She's written a book, Spies, Lies and Whistleblowers. Dialect's Tony Gosling tracked her down at last weekend's big green gathering near Cheddar.
Okay, could you introduce yourself and tell us something about why you decided to write the book? Maybe include in that.
I'm Annie Machon. I'm a former MI5 officer, the partner of the MI5 whistleblower David Shaler, and also the author of a book called Spies, Lies and Whistleblowers, which looks at the whole Shaler case and the crimes and incompetence of the intelligence services. The reason I decided to write the book was twofold, really. First of all, I think we're living in an increasingly dangerous world. Our political leaders are becoming increasingly remote from us and unaccountable, and they are taking us into illegal wars which lead to the so-called war on terror, putting us all at greater risk. This book looks at the links between the government in this country, in the US, and also the intelligence services, how they get it wrong, how the intelligence services themselves aren't up to their job. They let bombs go off on British streets which should not have gone off because they had reliable information. They put innocent people behind bars. They conduct illegal operations. And most crucially, they try to assassinate Colonel Gaddafi of Libya by funding an al-Qaeda cell in Libya to assassinate him. So there's a whole range of different crimes and misdemeanors that I wanted to report. I also wanted to look at how the links between the government and the intelligence services worked, particularly how the government will cover up on their behalf, lie on their behalf, as we saw in the run-up to the Iraqi war. And I think it's dangerous. It's dangerous for all of us in this country. The second reason why I wanted to write it is the old cliche that I wanted to put our side of the story and set the record straight. David has been vilified in the British media. The government has ensured that the spin machine made him out to be some sort of traitor who'd put agent lives at risk, who'd done it for money, who was a Walter Mitty character. And it's all lies, and I wanted to put that straight.
Now, what you're saying is that the government has, or MI5, has made mistakes in preventing terrorist attacks, but surely that's just a natural part. It's not going to be able to prevent every terrorist attack.
It's certainly never going to be able to prevent every terrorist attack. I mean, they go around saying that 7-7 was just an honest mistake because it was like looking for a needle in a haystack trying to find these terrorists. However, they should be in a position where they are at least getting prior warning that something's going to go ahead. They should be in a position where they've got intelligence coming in to give them a vague picture, at the very least, about the state of our security in this country. Now, what we had in the run-up to 7-7 was quickly admitted to be an intelligence vacuum. If they can't do their jobs, they can't even get agents in place to give them at least some information about what's going on. What's the point of spending all this money on them when they're just not up to the job?
But it's an ever-changing situation, particularly with the recent bombs in London. Surely the intelligence services are learning what the terrorists are up to, just like anybody else would. I mean, why is it so difficult for you to accept that they might get it wrong?
Well, they have historic problems with trying to penetrate terrorist groups. When they took over the study of the IRA in the early 1990s, they had no agents on the ground reporting on the IRA. Similarly, they've been aware that Islamic extremist terrorism is a growing threat since the early 1990s, and of course that was confirmed by the bombing of the World Trade Center in New York in 1993. So they've had over a decade to get their act together. They haven't done that. They've had no prior warning whatsoever of these attacks in the UK. And I just think that's a gross dereliction of duty. I mean, we throw billions of taxpayers' money every year into the intelligence services, and they're not doing their job. People die on our streets because they're not doing their job.
So if they're not stopping these terrorist attacks, what are they doing? What is all this money going on?
Well, good question. Lots of mismanagement, gross layers of management. Probably honestly don't know. It's just incredible to think where this money does go. I know there's a lot of bureaucracy. They prefer to monitor people remotely. This is something that they got very used to doing in the Cold War, when they could monitor political subversives by listening to their telephones, looking at their letters, their posts coming in and things like that. So they're quite happy to sit back and throw money at modern technologies, which mean they can do that without having to get their hands dirty. Of course, going out and recruiting agents is a very difficult and potentially dangerous role to play. They get a bit frightened, to be quite honest. They don't really want to do it, even though that's the best way of gathering intelligence. So I think the money's probably going on increasingly high-tech gadgets, a bit like the Americans.
So what do you think about the new legislation that's coming in, or at least there's attempts to bring it in, like the ID card legislation, extending the amount of time the police are allowed to keep terrorist suspects before they go to trial? Because surely this is going to really make sure that, maybe at least this is what we're told, it's going to make sure that terrorist attacks don't happen in the future.
Well, that's the line the government's putting out. I mean, it's so inevitable there'd be this knee-jerk reaction post a terrorist incident in this country. Even the Metropolitan Police Special Branch have admitted that the ID cards will not stop determined terrorists. It'll just pick up on, you know, minor criminals and people trying to sort of keep their heads under the radar in this country. In terms of keeping suspects in prison for longer without trial, that's a dangerous path to go down because, of course, it just breeds resentment within the ethnic communities. And, in fact, we've seen that already in the internment of foreigners in this country, in Belmarsh. Some of them have been rotting there for 3-4 years post the September the 11th attacks in the States. It just does not work. And it is just a typical knee-jerk, blinkered reaction on the part of the government to erode our traditional liberties. I have to say as well that the intelligence services in this country have some of the most draconian powers already available to any intelligence services in Western democracies. And I can't see why they need yet more. I mean, they're just taking the piss, to be quite honest.
Anyway, back to your book. Can you tell me, did you have any problems sort of getting it published? Because obviously as an ex-spy, you might find the Official Secrets Act kicking in and your book being taken away maybe from the publishers and attempts to censor it. So what happened with your particular book? Can you tell us about that?
Oh, it was a nightmare trying to get this book out. I finished it in...
There's a horse just going past it.
It was a nightmare trying to get this book out. I actually finished writing it in 2003. Because I'm a former MI5 officer myself, I had to submit it to only MI5 for clearance. If I'd given it to anyone else, I would have been breaking the Official Secrets Act. They sat on it for 15 months. So it was only finally cleared in February this year. That's 2005. I wanted the book out last year. I wanted it out so that people could see the sort of problems within the intelligence services during the Hutton inquiry, during the Butler inquiry, and also see that the lies carried out by government ministers in the run-up to the general election. Now, of course, the book was sat on and sat on by MI5. It finally was published on the 10th of May, so 5 days after the general election. It's just typical.
That was former MI5 counterintelligence officer Annie Mashon there talking to Dialect's Tony Gosling about her book Spies, Lies and Whistleblowers, published earlier this year by the Book Guild Limited. And you'll be able to meet Annie at Bristol's Cube Cinema on Sunday the 11th of September, where she'll be in town for a 9/11 special. And next week her partner David Shaler will be giving Dialect his take on the War on Terror. Now we've got a tune, I've got to tell you about a little association we've just got together with another local Bristol music organisation called Red Square, who I think they're, is it fair to say, promote Bristol, local Bristol music? Promote Bristol in general. But we've got a CD of music that is all free to play. It fits our new music policy. And it's all local. And this is Rasher with Breathe. Am I going out? Am I talking?
Yeah.
Right, sorry, I can't hear myself. I think the headphones have finally lost their juice. Okay, so I'm going to talk without the headphones for now. That was Rasher from Bristol with Breathe, and you can find that and lots of other good Bristol music at redsquare.me.uk. Fantastic site. You can get live previews of all the tunes, or of lots of tunes, not all of everybody's tunes, obviously. Now, 2 weeks after the London bombs, representatives of Britain's security services met Prime Minister Tony Blair to decide how to deal with the so-called terrorist threat. At that meeting, the security services apologised, telling the Prime Minister they were suffering from an information vacuum. On the internet, a wealth of information is available, throwing doubt on the idea that the attacks were carried out by suicide bombers and linking them instead with British and Israeli intelligence services. Bristol has a new website on the bombings, which the police would do well to look at if they want to catch the London bombers. Dialect's Tony Gosling spoke to webmaster Adrian Connock.
My name's Adrian Connock, webmaster of officialconfusion.com. The reason I set the website up was basically to aid people researching what really happened on 7/7 and to just have it as a database of all the mainstream articles, all the non-mainstream articles, and basically as much information as I could get together about it. And
why officialconfusion.com is an interesting title. Well, why did you choose that?
Well, I chose that because what we're being told does make things officially confusing, and it's the officials that are confusing us.
So can you give us an example of the sorts of things that have come out through the TV news, etc., that, you know, people might have found confusing?
Well, the classic example is the explosives. I mean, one minute it's military grade, next minute it's hair bleach and boss in motion, you know, and now it's acetone peroxide. I mean, this is the NYPD last week saying it's hair bleach. I mean, days after it, we were told it was Hugo Boss, you know, the green one that one of them apparently purchased loads of. I mean, this explosive issue is we still haven't had a definite answer. And I mean, that's a real key point here with the officials confusing us.
So what have you been able to find out using your archive of material? Is there anything that's come to light that maybe the police haven't themselves found?
Well, one of the key things I found out through researching this, everyone had found Bruce Lade's testimony on the Cambridge Evening News website, where he goes on about a hole in the floor of the carriage where the metal was pushed upwards. And I correlated this with a Mark Honigsbaum from The Guardian audio clip of the day after he'd interviewed several witnesses at Edgware Road, and where they speak of tiles and the floors raising up and the train being derailed, all this stuff indicating that bombs were underneath the trains. So that's something key that I've found out myself, and which has been picked up by some major sites on the internet.
So why do you think that it's necessary for ordinary people like you to draw your own conclusions? Surely with the entire might of the Metropolitan Police on the case, there's really no need for somebody to start doing a little sort of freelance investigation of their own.
Well, that's a good question. I think the evidence that the police have is often laid nicely in front of them for them. And you know, especially after 2 weeks after the 7th, there was the 21st attacks, and the whole police focus and the media focus seems to be on these attacks and solving them. And the 7th attacks seem to have just been slipped out off the horizon. Why do I feel I have to do this site? Because I have an insight into these sort of things. I saw the suspicions straight away, such as the Israeli embassy having a prior warning, such as the being simultaneous, exactly the same terrorist drills going on for simultaneous bombs at the same stations that very morning. I mean, all these things, if you've been reading about 9/11 and other conspiracies regarding terrorist attacks over the years, then it's easy to see that there's something in this on the 7th.
So what's your conclusion as to who might be behind this? Is it Muslim suicide bombers, as we're being told by the tabloid press?
No, I think it's an intelligence operation, likely to be MI6. And they've used these people, I mean, the patsies, as we call them, these four, I suspect, weren't on the train. I mean, eyewitness reports, this is unconfirmed, are saying now that the 740 that they were supposed to be on from Luton wasn't actually even running. So whether they were actually on those tubes is not been proven to us. And the fact that their IDs were conveniently found by the bomb sites, you know, I mean, it's like the passport being found at the Twin Towers, you know, that floated down. I mean, there's no solid proof that they were there, okay? So, for me, with the evidence of bombs being under the tubes and them not producing any CCTV to suggest that they were actually on those tubes, you know, I mean, that's why I think that they were likely duped and taken out before they even got on the tubes. Or that you could have the scenario where they did have bombs on them, but they're only very minor bombs and the real explosion came from underneath. We really don't know.
Dialect's Tony Gosling there, talking to Adrian Connock, webmaster of www.officialconfusion.com, a new Bristol-based web archive of all information relating to the London bombings, a kind of citizens' investigation into the attacks.
Radio Dialect is your local internet radio station. Check our website on radiodialect.net.
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 RadioDialect.net. Oh, yes, 35 miles away from Bristol in Stroud, a pioneer housing scheme has just been built. Spring Hills is a co-housing project with space for over 100 people and with a communal building where residents meet for a big communal meal once a week. Dialect's Tony Gosling, once again, out roving reporter. He's been off for a few weeks, so it's a good job he's collected something for us. Dialect's Tony Gosling tracked down one of the designers of the project that took a great deal of effort and commitment to get through the planning system.
I'm Jonathan Hines, Director of Archetype. And we're the architects that were chosen to work with the Stroud Housing Scheme and have worked with them over the last 5 years to get the project designed and built.
Now, this is a special type of housing scheme that's taken place in Stroud. How many people are actually living there now?
Exact number, I'm not sure, it's over 100. There's 35 units, houses and flats, and a shared common house on the site. So there's a whole range of people from young families to retired people, single people, groups of people living together.
As regards the layout of the housing units, what's different to what people would just normally expect?
Well, the essential difference is that the cars are kept off the site, so the whole site is completely pedestrian, therefore a nice place to be, completely safe for children to play outside. And at the heart of this site, there's a shared common house where they've got shared facilities, a dining room, a kitchen and workshop areas. So basically the car is relegated to the edge and it becomes a people-centred place.
And is it a sort of, is there any sort of recreational facilities? Is there any sort of park nearby or part of the project? Just give us an idea of what the place looks like.
Okay, there is a park nearby. You walk through a park from the site into the centre of Stroud. But within the site itself, there's this pedestrian street. There's a little a communal green at the heart of the site. So it's a place where people can sort of relax and play outside quite happily and quite safely. The whole site feels different to most English housing estates also because it's built entirely out of timber, with timber and random cladding. So it's a very warm, friendly feel to it compared with the sort of rather cold brick of most British houses.
And what, if any, are the benefits for living in this kind of way for people that maybe been used to tower blocks and the normal run-of-the-mill 60s, 70s housing estates?
I would say that it's a very different experience almost from wherever people lived before because there's a real sense of community. People are part of something. They share looking after the site together. And so it basically has a sense of community and collaboration which no housing estate, whether it's a 60s tower block or a current housing developer estate, has, something which we are really part of.
This is one of the largest photovoltaic cells used on any housing project in the country. Why have solar panels on the roof? Isn't this just really an extraneous cost? It's much cheaper to get your electricity through the mains.
It would be, apart from the fact we managed to get a government grant to pay for most of the cost of the PVs. So for very little extra cost, we're generating electricity on 20 houses, contributing a major part of electricity bills for those households, and obviously contributing greatly to reducing carbon emissions and global warming by generating electricity in that way.
Well, this sounds, you know, exactly what the government wants. How come, though, this kind of project is so difficult to do in the UK?
I would say that it's difficult to do, partly because there isn't a precedent for it. It's very common in Denmark, where it's become an accepted way of people doing it. But there's no reason why it shouldn't happen. Now that this one has happened as a financial model and a way of doing it, other people couldn't adopt a similar approach and start doing it. And basically, it's avoiding relying on developers, it's avoiding relying on the state, it's actually people getting together and doing it for themselves.
Now, I've been to other countries, and New Zealand, for example, lots of people build their own homes. That doesn't really happen hardly at all in the UK. Why is that?
I think we probably lost our ability to do that in the Industrial Revolution, when workers were provided with housing and people sort of fell out of the habit of doing it for themselves. And I think it's something that we can relearn. It doesn't mean you had to build every bit of the house yourself, but I think the process of securing land and doing it with people, employing builders, doing something yourself, there's no reason why most people couldn't get involved in that if they had the inclination to do so.
So for somebody living in a little sort of maybe a two-bedroom flat in Bristol, is there really any prospect in ever getting involved in a project like this?
There is. I mean, there is a Bristol Cohousing Group established and looking to buy a site and develop. I'm not saying it's easy, because one of the most difficult things in this country is actually finding land and managing to secure it against the competition that you get from housing developers. But with enough people and enough will, anybody could and should be encouraged to do so.
Dialect's Tony Gosling there, talking to Jonathan Hines, the architect who designed Stroud's revolutionary Spring Hill co-housing project, which is on the web at www.cohouses.net. And if you'd like to visit Spring Hill, call David on 01453 766 466. And now we've got some music. Again, I think this... Is this compliant with our new music policy, Jeff?
Yes, it is. Yep.
We've had permission from Trailer Trash Orchestra to play their tune, Ecstasy.
That was Trailer Trash Orchestra with Ecstasy. I'm Jeff Sparks with your weekly What Song Guide from Radio Dialect. Let's start off with telling you about tomorrow night. At the Bunch of Grapes in Denmark Street, Bristol, the melodic rock group Stiff Kittens will be performing. I'm not sure on the entry fee, but doors open at 8 p.m. Moving on to Saturday night, and at the Prom in Gloucester Road, they have the country, swing, rockabilly, Cajun act Cowtrain performing. Doors open at 8:30 p.m. and entry is £4. Also on Saturday night, and this time down the Reckless Engineer, is the rock metal group Blackfire. Now, we played you a track of theirs last week, so if you enjoyed it, then head on down to the Reckless Engineer for a notorious and energy-packed gig. Now on to Song of the Week. And this week I have a song by the band that spit like this. This song is from the latest EP, Sleaze Sells But Who's Buying, which is available to buy from most record shops and also from Amazon.co.uk. The song is Trust Your Instincts.
On eBay, sure is a way to make a living, but it might not be something you should tell your dad about. Oh no, because you know it's necessary. So, you might do things we don't want to do. You must trust your instincts, cause you know it's necessary, so you better not be telling me what I should do, cause I've got to sleep with a few tricks too. Step right up and I'll show you. In on a postcard, my beautiful spit. Oh no, cause you know it's necessary, so you better not be telling me what you do. Cause I've got to sleep with a few tricks too. Step right up and I'll show you. I'd like to invite you to live this way, but there's only a few. There's only a few. Show you how to eat, show you how to sleep, and I'll show you how to spit like this. Teach you how to weep, show you how to speak, and I'll show you. Yeah, kids around here, teach you how to walk, teach you how to talk, and I'll teach you the facts of life. Show you what to wear, how to do your hair, and I'll show you how it's done around here. Cause you know. Better not be telling me what I should do, cause I'm gonna sleep with a few tricks too. Step right up and I'll show you. Better not tell me what I should do, cause I'm gonna sleep with a few tricks too. Step right up and I'll show you.
That was like this with Trust Your Instincts. Now we're moving on to Sunday, and time to tell you about the latest Sunday roast event down at the Fleece. The gig is free entry and runs from 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. and is headlined by Red Top Matches. Also on the bill is First of the Giants, Angry Panda, Hollow, Lost Continental, Clemiza Kimball, Black Chalk, Caffeine Kill, and The Disarmed. Now, out of that list, I would recommend you go and see Caffeine Keel, who are influenced by Nine Inch Nails and Sisters of Mercy, and the headliners, Red Top Matches, who play classic Gibson guitar rock. Also, also on the Sunday, this time at St. Bonaventure's, which is at Barclay Road, Bishopston, there is a singer-songwriter festival, which runs from 12 noon to 10:30 p.m. and costs £5 on the door. In between the performances of the featured acts, there will be an open mic session and also a songwriter masterclass during the day. The acts include Dave Totterdale and Hilary Pavey, who I've seen on many occasions and highly recommend. Also appearing on the bill is James Slater, Pete Rowe, Phil King, Phil Blandford, James Gill, and many more. That is all from me tonight, so until next week, have a good weekend and take care. Good night.
Dialect is a community project run by volunteers, and we need you. If you'd like to get involved, check out our website at radiodialect.net. Well, it's nearly 8 o'clock and the end of this week's show, but before we finish, it's over live to the other side of the studio to hear our regular lyrical commentator, Stanley Forbes.
Hello, good evening to you. Lovely to be here again. This is a poem, and I wanted to guess who it's by, really, in the style of, I don't know, Leonard Cohen or something. I'll play it, right, if I may. I witness that against the sharp blade they always faced difficulties, and they stood together. When the darkness comes upon us and we are bitten by a sharp tooth, I say our homes are flooded with blood and the tyrant is freely wandering in our homes. And from the battlefield vanished the brightness of swords and the horses. And over weeping sounds now we hear the beats of the drum and rhythm. They are storming his forts and shouting, we will not stop our raids until you free our land. Now, who was that by? Anybody?
No idea.
No idea.
I was just about to ask you.
It was by a man called Youssef Abu Helale, but embellished by Mr. Osama bin Laden. And that was a poem that he edited and said as kind of, I don't know, call to arms, if you like, or something after the September the 11th attacks. I found it on the internet today. I found it quite interesting. Right. So I decided to do it in a Leonard Cohen style.
What was the last couple of lines again?
Well, this is particularly one that he embellished. He said, we will not stop our raids until you free our lands.
I thought that sounded particularly strange in the context of the poem.
Yes. Well, it was. I think it was, we will not stop our... something else until you free our lands, our football games, our pie cooking. I don't know.
But revolutionary pie cooking was very popular in those parts.
Yes, but perhaps not quite strong enough for Mr. Bin Laden. So.
Well, thanks, Stanley, for appearing on our show. Once again, Dialect, as everybody should know by now, is a community access co-op, and it's completely run by volunteers. And if you'd like to help with making our programmes, then get in touch. Have a chat to Volunteering Bristol on Royal Oak Avenue off Queen Square, or call them on 0117 989 7733. And stay in touch via our website, that's radiodialect.net. Another way to get in touch with us is to email studio@radiodialect.net, and I'll make sure that everybody sees it on our mailing list. We've got a Dialect Radio mailing list on yahoogroups.com as well, if you want to see the all the background. This week's show was brought to you by Richard Ayres, our engineer, Jeff Sparks with his music slot. Producer was Tony Gosling. We've had, of course, the inimitable Stanley Forbes. And I'm Martin Cosgrave. Next week, as well as unexpected weekend goings-on, I don't know what that means, we have an exclusive chat with former MI5 officer David Shaler and ask him what he makes of the so-called War on Terror. Tony, what does unexpected weekend goings-on mean?
Well, you never know what's going to happen over the weekend, Martin. And that's what we bring to you on the Thursday show.
Okay, so...
That's the way it's run up till now so far, anyway.
I'm not quite clear on how you... Oh, are you just expecting something unexpected?
Well, something unexpected always happens at the weekend.
Well, okay, well, that explains that. Okay, so something unexpected next week for you, as usual. So expect that. Thanks very much. This is Martin Cosgrave wishing you a very good evening.